You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
The 3CR Gardening Show is coming to you today from the Woi Wurrung Nation. We acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the traditional owners of this land. We recognise the practices of care and cultivation of the land and waters by the First Peoples and pay our respects to their elders past and present. Wherever you are and wherever you garden, we encourage you to know whose land you're on.
Good morning, listeners to the 3CR Garden Show. I'm Virginia Haywood, and with me today, last week we had two Chloes, this week we've got two Stephens, Stephen Wells, Stephen Ryan, and we've got Ben. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, great, good morning.
And I thought my first question to you guys would be, what's happening at your places?
Ooh.
Ben.
Well, at the moment we're preparing for the plant fairs, so we've got
They're all coming
weeks,
up.
Yeah, so 2 weeks in a row we've got Bollebeck and then up well
the Jindavik festival.
Yeah. So we've got the two in a row, and so we're prepping for that. So in the garden, I think we're just sort of just cutting back things like that winter. When everything, a lot of the perennials, when they sort of die down, the old sort of spent flower heads, and now we're sort of printing all that back and
cleaning up.
Yeah, cleaning up. Yeah, getting ready for that, all that new flush of new growth that's sort of starting to merge now. So I think that's getting it prepared.
I'm in a similar sort of mode. What I'm doing at the moment, because the biomass is just starting to erupt out of the ground, I'm trying to get the sort of late winter, early spring weeding finished and get the mulch in so that I can still get it in, because once things really start to move, it's almost impossible to sort of push mulch in around some of those soft perennials because you can do them all sorts of harm.
But it's good, I think, with the rain that we've had too. You get that mulch on now.
And the weeding is easier whilst the ground's still moist. So I'm madly trying, I've got a bad back as well, so I'm trying to do it gently and within reason so I don't make my back any worse. But yes, I'll never make it all the way around the garden, but I'm, sort of started in one corner and I'm trying to work my way around as much as I can, because the more I get done now, the less I'll have to do a little later in the season. So, but my problem is I also make my own mulch in lots of ways, so I've got prunings to put through the shredder, I've got weeding to do before I can put the shreddings back onto the garden bed, and I've also got compost I'd like to put down on the garden bed before I put the shreddings on. So it can, in fact, be a very slow process, and so I don't necessarily get terribly far at once. But the areas I'll get done, they'll hold me in good stead for the rest of the season. So that's really what I'm up to.
And Stephen Wells?
I'm thinking about the gardens at the Royal Talbot. I have a balcony garden, so my own garden is a little, very small thing, so I don't have the
pressures,
at this stage, at this point in time.
Do you miss your old garden?
Yes and no. So I haven't yearned for it, but I miss elements of it, or miss having, and that's partly because, I had it for 19 years and built it and developed it, so it was my, from nothing, so invested into it in that context. So it's interesting, a different expectation that on myself of what I would think I might feel.
And you do have Royal Talbot, so it's not like you're denied gardening.
No, so I still have the chance to get in and amongst it. So, but it is a little bit about prepping for the next season, and I probably hold my tension at the moment there is, do I put mulch down now or do I wait a little bit and hope to get more rain?
No, do it now. do it now.
Because, often the soil does dry a bit over the hot summers that we have.
So. I think while we've actually got rain, it's best to do it now.
Yeah, and we've got a forecast for some more rain over the next week or so. So yeah. I don't know whether it's going to be heavy rain or what, but there'll be a little bit more. And I have to say the mulches I put down are my own shreddings from the garden most of the time, and the water seems to get through it anyway.
So it'll be good.
Yeah, so it doesn't seem to impede terribly much moisture getting into the ground, so I'd much rather get it down.
So I think the trick is you do it thin, but more frequently.
Mm.
So yes, that's the trick with it. Yeah. So, because as it's breaking down, it's feeding the bacteria, the microorganisms in the soil, but then also giving you that nice coverage as well.
Yeah.
And then you can put that fresh new sort of mulch on top of it later on. So,
well, I've this year decided, because I'm like you, I'd been in my garden about 20 years.
Yep.
And I've never pay any attention to the front, because there I've just got a fabulous view, whereas out the back I've got a totally fantastic view.
Mm-hmm.
And I do all the working in my garden out the back. So this year I decided you've done nothing to the garden along the driveway for years, so I've been in.
Ooh.
I've been pulling things out. I've been trying to get rid of this vile Hibbertia that's spread everywhere, and this variegated grass that's spread everywhere, and pulling out boring geraniums and putting other things in. So I've got a lot of mulching to do.
Mm-hmm.
Still got spot weeding as I've got rid of those things I hate.
Ah, but you've also got gaps.
Yeah, that's it.
Gaps.
Yeah.
I love gaps. Gaps are fabulous things.
And the other thing I'm pulling a lot of it out is the Plectranthus.
Yeah.
Because it just spreads and spreads and spreads. I mean, aren't gardeners interesting? Not in a weedy way.
Yeah, no, they're not. But gardeners are funny people, because I'll get people come into the nursery and they'll say, oh, really struggling to grow so-and-so, and they whinge and complain. And then they say, by the way, that plant I bought from you has taken off across the garden. So they whinge if they can't grow something, and then they whinge because they can.
Exactly.
So we're never happy as gardeners,
exactly.
Really.
No. But that's definitely, for me, it's quite exciting that this year I've decided to actually tackle the front. And
I love it when you really redo a whole bed.
Mm.
Yeah. Because our garden's got to a point now where most of it's just fiddly little additions and, you know, just minor things, because virtually all the beds are laid out and the planting's more or less done. But if I have to redo a whole section, that's fabulous.
Yeah, so. Well, I mean, Kerry and I were out weeding the other night and we noticed a few new things flowering, and so we got all excited and thought, oh, good, we've got heaps of it in stock in the nursery, so let's go and plant a lot more swathes of it through there. And, yeah, so we sort of got sort of quite excited about that.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to get rid of your profits. But anyhow. Yes.
Well, Stephen.
Yes?
You had a question you wanted to ask us all.
I was pondering on this the other day, partly because I'm interested to learn, but also I think it's actually quite an interesting little reflection. So the question I've got for each of us is, if you could only visit four gardens anywhere in the world for the rest of your life, which ones would they be?
Ooh. Yes, and I've been pondering that question on the way down in the car, and I've certainly come up with two gardens that I would revisit, and they're both for sort of similar reasons. I find gardens really exciting and I'm happy to revisit them if they're dynamic and things are moving and things are happening and people are improving them and refining them and whatever. And so I think one of the world's great gardens from that perspective has to be Great Dixter in England. Fergus Garrett has taken Great Dixter to the next level after Christopher Lloyd passed away.
Yep.
And they've got students working in there all the time. They're trying new things. And, of course, it's all laid on top of a historic and important setting, house and garden, with all that Edwin Lutyens design and what have you. So the whole sort of dynamic of a historic garden that is cutting edge really excites me. So I would definitely go back to Great Dixter. And for a similar reason, I would go to Longford in North America.
Yes.
I mean, it's Disney gardening. It is just so over the top. But everything is done with absolute precision. And, you know, you won't find a dead water lily leaf in the ponds. The trained chrysanthemums, you know how the Chinese do those fabulous trained chrysanthemums? Well, they do that at Longford as well. And so every flower on the dome is in perfection when you see it. If it's not in perfection, it's not there.
Go and pick one and go and glue it back in somewhere.
It exhausts me, a garden like that, because it's just so intense. But it's just gardening on a scale that you just don't see anywhere else in the world. I mean, they've got money to throw at that place. Some of the things are a bit crass, like their water garden with the fountain jets, and they have classical music that's lined up with the water. So you'll have the crescendo as the fountains go off and all that sort of thing. So some of it's a little over the top, but certainly...
I've found quite a lot of American gardens over the top.
But, yeah, Longford is one of those places that I would definitely recommend to people because they just take it to a new level.
Yep.
So they're two I thought of on the way down.
Great Dixter, I find an interesting... Well, I was there 2 years ago and I hadn't been for a long time, and I thought, this is a garden I'd like, rather than one of the four best, one I have to see on my deathbed. I did think it was one I'd really like to live near.
Yeah.
It's one of those gardens that is so much in and evolving.
Oh, yes.
That you could visit regularly and always, which you find in your own garden. I mean, it's one of the things I love about my garden, you know. A month ago, it was all about pink and yellow. By the time we get to autumn, there'll be no pink. It'll all be about orange and blue.
Yeah.
I love the change of the seasons.
Yeah, I do like gardens that do that as well.
But Great Dixter, you have that sense of things happening.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's a very dynamic garden. And on a slightly different thing, on the way down, I was thinking, yes, all those gardens are gardens I would visit again. But there's a couple of gardens in the world that I haven't been to that I desperately want to go to, which is another sort of thing. One of which I will be going to, I hope, in 2 years' time, and that's Jimmy Blake's garden in Ireland.
Yes, yes.
He's another one of these plants people who takes things to a complete and utter level that most of us haven't got the time, energy or money to do. I mean, he's one of those that lifts all his tenders and puts them away in the greenhouse for the winter and gets everything resettled back into the garden again, and he's a great plantsman, has amazing plant knowledge. And I'm planning to see his garden when I take an Irish tour in 27.
And so, what is the name of that garden?
Huntingbrook. And it's a great... From what I've seen on, because Jimmy's also a good social media operative, so what I've seen on social media, he's really, and I met him once, he was out here for, I think, one of the design conferences a year or two back, or maybe longer, and he came and visited us, and so I want to get back and see his garden, and I believe his sister's garden next door is equally as beautiful, but in a quite different way.
So does that count as your fourth, or is that?
No, that won't be my fourth. The fourth one I want to go to is Lotus Land.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Where?
It's another North American garden. Was developed by a completely eccentric lady of huge wealth, and it's just completely and utterly over the top, and I just want to get there and see it. It's got huge cacti gardens and all sorts of things, grottos and, you know, anything that could be made has been made. And so, yeah, that's one I'd like to visit at some point.
Well, excellent. Last night Stephen Wells and I were sitting in the pub and he posited this question we should ask everybody, and he's asking me, and I got a phone call from England at the time. So I've got two friends in England, one who lived here for years, the other who was a guide at the Botanic Gardens for years. So I texted them both and asked them the question, and one of them said, I asked my gardening chum, and we both come up with Huntingbrook in Ireland as one of the ones.
Oh, well, that's Jimmy Blake's garden. Yes,
and so one of the other ones they came up with was Cotton Manor in Northamptonshire, which I've
never heard of it.
So we have to look that one up. I don't know how you pronounce it. Cotton Manor. And knowing the Brits, you could pronounce it any peculiar way.
Yeah, Chumley or something.
Exactly. But I thought that's interesting.
Yeah. Huntingbrook is really fascinating. So when we started to put this Irish tour together a couple of months ago, because it's still being refined, and a couple of the things I was determined about, one was that we weren't going to just visit gardens. We had to do some cultural sites and some interesting scenery and stuff as well. And there were gardens I desperately wanted to visit, and there were gardens I'd been to before that I felt we just shouldn't miss, places like Powers Court. They're just iconic gardens. And so we will be visiting Jimmy's garden. It's already locked in, so as long as I get enough people to come with me on the tour. But we'll visit things like the Skellig Islands to have a look at puffins.
No, hang on, we're going back to the four.
Yeah, all right, sorry. Yeah.
Ben,
yes, you haven't said anything.
Well, I just thought like my own garden. Because you got your own connection to it. Mm. And I think also because we got a lot of the variants of varieties that we actually do grow, like just getting it into the garden and sort of designing it to sort of showcase a lot of
these. You just don't want to leave home.
No, I don't.
I'm glad you said that because that was one of the thoughts of hoping it would be in the mix.
Yeah, yeah. It's just because you've got that connection. But then also it'd be my mother's garden and my nan's garden because they're the people who got me into gardening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've passed away now, so a long time ago. So, you know, I've got those memories of being in the garden when I was a child with my nan and with my mum and you know, the particular plants that, you know, you've just even common, like, salvias and all those sort of things and snapdragons. I mean, I'm not a big fan of them, but I have a connection with it because that's what my mum and my nan used to always
grow. A good snapdragon in a 400-year-old wall. In Europe somewhere. Yes. And you see snapdragons growing out of the dry stone walls.
Yeah.
And the walls are the important bit, but they look so much better, funnily enough.
So that's just that connection.
Yeah,
that's how I sort of see it. And then you've got nature's design. I mean, when you walk through a sort of, especially like a cold temperate rainforest, and if you can just walk through there just silently and just look around and try and think about how you actually feel, and you'll actually feel really calm within yourself, then you can actually sort of have this sort of, I don't know, you have this sort of like connection with what's around you, with the plants around you and all that. So you notice things a lot more clearly as well.
Very good.
So, yeah.
What about you, Virginia?
Well, I struggled with it. I had the same. I love my garden. So and I love that thing in my garden of the changing seasons and what's happening. Mm. So it's the knowledge of the garden, which is why the thrill of Great Dixter made me want to live near it.
Yes.
However, I don't want to move back to Britain, and if I did, I wouldn't live down there.
But well, there you
the
go.
Fact that that's all ridiculous is beside the point. One of mine is Sissinghurst, which is quite near Great Dixter, and it's a garden that I have seen huge change. I was lucky in that one of my best friend's sister was the head gardener, so we used to go down a lot when it was closed. So it's that same thing. I got to know the garden.
That makes it more personal.
Makes it, you know it. You see the changes. Whereas when you only visit a garden every couple of years or even less, it's not the same. And then I was trying to think of gardens in Victoria because I've seen some wonderful gardens and I just promptly went blank.
Well, see, for me, one of the ones would be the Botanic Gardens. Now, I'm here in Melbourne, so I'm going to use the one here in the city, but equally Cranbourne would be. But the thing about it for me is, well, actually, let's talk about both. The one up here in Melbourne, the thing I like about it is going at different times of the year and just seeing the ebbs and flows, because you've got different, you know, you've got the perennial border that has its.
Mm-hmm.
It's, hey, look at us, here we are, look, we're bringing this moment of joy. But then you've got the, coming back to your point, Ben, almost like the Fern Gully is this constant sort of green haven, particularly then in summer when it's a, you know, stinking hot day and you're going through there. So, but interesting enough, the coming back to the Cranbourne one, my reflection on that is botanic gardens are often more well-established, been around for a while. So you go into them and they're there. But Cranbourne, the excitement that we've had over the last 20 years of that being developed is we're seeing it evolve. And in 100 years' time, someone will be sitting here going, wow, great to see a really well-established, you know, over 100-year-old botanic garden.
That's assuming 3CR still going, of course.
3CR will continue to be going.
The 3CR garden show will definitely be here in 100 years.
Even if 3CR isn't, yes.
But see, the other thing that I'd love, and this is, I really have a desire, like I do enjoy seeing bigger gardens, but I really am interested to try and seek out the smaller ones because they have their own challenges as well. And, you know, out of adversity comes creativity. You know, you kind of, how do you make something small look really interesting and be something that you would go, I want to be in here and keep visiting and seeing it. And so, yeah, it's a bit of a quest.
I think that thing about small gardens, it's one of the things you really notice in a city like London when it has open gardens. You know, there will inevitably be something that's really quite small.
Yeah.
And usually absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do. They're very competitive about their gardens.
You know, now, I think I know that we do have some really lovely gardens here in Victoria. So it's not that we're saying we don't have it, but here it's just interesting.
Well, hopefully people will start texting in wonderful gardens for us. If you want to text in your favourite garden, text us on 0488 809 855. Or if you want to ring and tell us about your favourite garden, 9419 0155. Because Susie has texted in, great question from Stephen Wells, but what about doing five gardens you'd visit in Victoria and five gardens outside? Well, excellent. I think five gardens is too many.
Yeah, that's too hard. Can't think hard enough for that.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's good. You know, this is the quest to have the people that have, like Stephen, have visited gardens, been to many gardens and others, going, oh, there's this one. I'd be sitting there with my phone out going, before I forget, I need to put that down.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And add it to the list.
But then there's a lot of private gardens too, where they just don't open their gardens.
Won't.
They won't, yeah.
I get the point of privacy and, you know, it's their private haven and so forth, but if somebody's a really good gardener, part of the joy of gardening for me is to share it with other people. So if you think your garden's good enough and you're happy with it, if you're not sharing it with other people, I think that's a bit sad.
Yeah, it is a bit.
Apart from anything else, you get lots of interesting feedback. So you benefit from having people in your garden because they'll often come up with a comment about something and you'll go, oh, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah.
So I think there's a really good to and fro when you have visitors in a garden. I mean, I like my garden. I've got no objections to it. I put 30 years of my life into it, and I started with no soil on a rough, sclerophyll, dry bush block, and it's taken me 30 years and now a really bad back to get a garden that I'm, you know, basically happy with. I mean, you're never happy with your garden. I mean,
there's always room for improvement.
Yeah, there's always things that need doing. There's always things that you could be improving the garden with. So you're never completely happy. But I love having a garden opening or just having a friend who rings you up and says, oh, I'd like to come and have a look at the garden here at home.
Yeah.
Because that can be a one-on-one thing, which I find really personal and lovely. But even having groups through the garden, I mean, just having somebody come up and say, I just love that whatever in flower.
Correct.
Also the timing thing. Like, I went to see a garden up in the Dandenongs owned by one of the OGV people, Simon, and it was just breathtaking because it's full of camellias and, well, more magnolias.
Yeah.
And rhododendrons and things, you know, that Dandenongs, it's real temperate rainforest.
Yeah.
And he's been doing the garden for 30 years, so there's some things there that are very old. And but he'd also, since I'd last been there, he'd taken some stuff down, so there was more of a sense of space, which made the good things more available. It wasn't so, you know, everything wasn't competing so much, and it was just fabulous. And I adore Craig's garden.
Yeah.
I think it's not a huge garden, but I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think
there's lots and lots of good gardens up there, certainly. It's been a great place.
What are your favourite gardens in the in Macedon?
Oh.
Or in
people often ask me that question.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
It is a hard one because the Mount Macedon gardens, although they were all sort of developed, the old hill station gardens, within a few decades of each other, it isn't like it is in England where there'll be sort of the Capability Brown era or the, you know, the Edwin Lutyens era or whatever, and lots of gardens ended up with a similar look. The Mount Macedon gardens all evolved slightly differently, and many of them didn't evolve in a organised way. So they sort of grew like Topsy. So each of them is quite unique and individual. And when people ask me that question, I often preface my answer with, are we talking about one that I could have with unlimited finances and do whatever I wanted with, or are we talking about one that if I had it, I'd have to manage it?
Right.
You know, so I look at it from two completely different ways. I mean, if my finances were unlimited, probably Denaira, which is now opening regularly every second and third Sunday and from Monday through Wednesday, I think, at the moment, right through. And they've got their Bluebell Festival coming up in due course. I mean, it's a grand old hill station garden with Bluebell line driveways, fabulous trees. All the big old trees were planted back in the 1870s and 80s, and they've still got room to mature. I mean, so whoever was thinking that garden through back then didn't do what I always do and crowd things in and cram it in and try and get as much in as possible. They thought the place through. So if I had unlimited finances, I could see myself as Lord of the Manor at Denaira.
And we've had one come in online.
Yeah.
Rokeby at Tallarook.
Ah, yeah.
Now, that is a lovely garden. Yeah, yeah. I've been there, and I think it's in the Open Garden Scheme this year.
Yeah.
And so it is a really... Tallarook's an interesting place. It's near the Goulburn, but a lot of it's very dry, and it's behind these really big hills, and they're very dry, and yet the garden has got a really wonderful, quite lush feel. It's a beautiful garden. Actually, it's Rokeby, R-O-K-E-B-Y. Open Gardens people might want to actually have a look at that and see where it is, because I'm sure it's opening sometime this year.
Yeah, it would definitely be worth going out there.
It would.
Yeah, lovely area. All right, so finally I'll just say that if I had to look after a garden on my own, it would probably be Durrell. Because although Durrell's a reasonable-sized property, it's a beautiful, old, heavily treed garden.
Great.
The lawns are almost all moss, so they don't require a lot of care and attention. The beds are so heavily mulched with decaying leaves, there's not a huge amount of weeding to do, but there's plenty of refining you could do.
But there's a lot of age to it, history.
I just love the age to it. Yeah. The house is livable, it's a good garden.
Yeah. And Rosie from Mitcham has got some gardens in Ireland that she's seen. Rosie, are you there?
Good morning.
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent. And you've been to Ireland?
Yes, I've rode my bike from garden to garden.
Oh, great.
In May. And I saw Mount Congreve, which is on the Waterford Greenway, which was perfect because I rode my bike right along that greenway, and there's this a magnificent garden. It's massive, beautifully laid out. Oh, there were rhododendrons in bloom. One interesting thing about Ireland, the pink rhododendron, I don't know, I think it seems to be the pink one, is a real weed problem. The pink
rhododendron super ponticum. It's become a serious weed in Scotland and Ireland.
And Wales.
Yeah, and Wales. So any of those sort of dampish areas, because it just completely smothers out anything that's growing in the same area. So it just makes such a dense canopy that nothing can grow through it.
So, yeah, I was seeing pink rhododendrons and gorse all over the place.
Well, gorse is fine because gorse is a native there.
Yes, it belongs.
It's meant to be there.
It's around Tallarook that gorse is definitely not meant to be.
Yeah, or on the hills of New Zealand, other places where it's taken off. But certainly when you visit a different country, you've got to take your blinkers off a bit because things we see as weeds here are often natives there.
Yes.
You know, blackberries in England, well, why not? That's where they belong. They came from there. You know, Paterson's Curse in the Canary Islands. Of course it should be there. It's a native.
Yeah.
So you've got to have a different attitude.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mean I thought it was a weed. I'm just talking about the things I saw, that there was lots of this yellow stuff and lots of this pink stuff. And, anyway, regarding Jimmy Blake's, I found it rather unkempt and rambling, but maybe we call it wilding. I don't know. But
yes, that's the fashionable excuse for weeds nowadays.
I found it a bit... I was pulling weeds out here, there and everywhere.
Well, I'm not sure I'd approve of that if I was Jimmy Blake, because you might be pulling out something you think's a weed and he doesn't.
Oh, I'm talking about cleavers.
Cleavers are fine. Anybody can pull those out.
I'm very careful, Stephen. I know my weeds, and I wouldn't bother any gardener if he's trying to do some wilding and wants some grasses that I might not like. No, that's his thing. But I found his sister's garden, June Blake. It's more compact.
Yeah.
And pretty, and it didn't have this rambling, unkempt. It's quite a contrast, and I preferred June's. But for a nice walk, Jimmy Blake's is great, and I certainly wouldn't miss it.
Would they be the highlights for you then, the ones that you saw, or have you got others that you enjoyed?
Mount Usher must not be missed.
Oh, it's
Mount,
a beautiful garden.
Right.
Mount Usher, Mount Congreve was on Powers Court, of course. Powers Court for its beautiful landscaping, it's beautifully laid out. Mount Usher, it's a lovely place to take your bus of tourists. It's got all those lovely little boutiques, It's got, shops that sell chutneys and things and others that sell also all sorts of giftware. It's just beautiful, Mount Usher, lovely for tourists, and I enjoyed it. Lovely restaurant and cafe and everything, and beautifully laid out gardens. Bantry House and Gardens.
Yeah, I remember Bantry House.
Yeah, I loved that because you could do a tour of the house, and I don't know if I'm a royalist or what, I'm not going to say what I am, but lovely photos of Princess Diana and stuff in there because, Prince Charles goes there and the Queen used to go there. She had her favourite aspect of the garden, and, they explained. And photos, like personal photos of the royals that you've never seen in the press, Diana with her children and stuff, and older photos than that. Lovely place to take people, and I enjoyed really rambling gardens. Wonderful.
Yeah, Bantry House. It's also a nice setting.
Yes. Yeah. Lovely. What else did I like? I've got so many notes that I can't find them all. But Helen Dillon's garden doesn't exist anymore, and that's sad. I was looking.
Yeah, I saw Helen Dillon's garden when she still had it, and that was actually a small garden behind Georgian sandstone. And her plant knowledge was amazing, and her planting combinations were really good. The only thing she did wrong with that garden, I think, was she put a big rectangular pool in, and scale-wise it was too big.
Mm.
It took over too much of the garden, and it was all paved around the edges of it. She said, a lot of people don't like my pond. They say it's too big. But she said, I don't care. I like my pond.
Well, that I agree with.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. She was a very strong personality lady, Helen Dillon. We had gin and tonic with her there one evening. And what did she say? Oh, my partner's mother and stepfather had been there with a tour they'd taken years before, and she commented on Joe and Neil. And then she turned around to Craig and I and said, we don't invite many people in anymore. she was quite a character.
Well, thank you for that, Rosie. That's really excellent.
And have fun with that tour. That'll be lovely.
Oh, good looking forward to it. It'll be great
for organising those things. It's wonderful. Okay, well done, you guys.
Thanks, Rosie. So that we've had.
Yeah, she came to see me about some ideas. So before she went,
good on her.
I'm glad that Rosie enjoyed herself
and riding. What a good way to do it. We've had one, I don't even know how to pronounce, Vivero Botanical Garden and Animal Sanctuary in Sal, Cape Verde.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I don't know.
Ooh.
I've never been to Cape Verde. But
no,
that's
nor have I.
Very inspiring. And then we've had another lovely message from Genevieve in Badger Creek. Hi, Genevieve. Well, I love my garden, but there's only me doing everything on 3 acres, and it's far from perfect. Has weeds and probably doesn't have a lot of points of interest. But yes, I'd love to share with genuine garden lovers, not necessarily open gardens.
This is really interesting because I was chatting with someone during the week. One little thing I did before I left my other house was to have a couple of garden gatherings.
Mm.
And just because I had thought, right, it's a spot that would actually be good to have different people coming in, just a small gathering of other garden lovers. That's one of my only regrets of moving on from it. I was like, God, that was actually really working well. Because it's just fun to have people coming in, like you were saying, Stephen, just chatting.
Yeah.
And one of the things that others have said is, oh, I'm not too sure about having that in my garden because, you know, it's not finished yet and it's not this or there's weeds or there's... And I was like, no, that's the beauty of opening up and going, you know what? It's actually... The garden is,
this is
a
life.
Part of it, but the other part of it is gathering with like-minded people in a really nice little spot and having those fun conversations of... Well, there's a gap there, Ben. What are you doing with that? What's your plan for that? And you go, oh, right, we've got this plant and I'm thinking about this. And you go, yeah, there's some weeds there. Yeah, been busy. My back's a bit sore or whatever it might be. And you go, it's just
but
everyday
Stephen,
life.
But, Stephen, I came to one of those and I just loved it. It was the first time I'd been to your garden and I thought it was just fabulous. I really enjoyed. And it is that thing about talking to people who are there for no other reason than they love gardens.
And I have to say, look, people do get nervous about opening their garden.
That's a different story, yeah.
It is a quite different thing, but it has its charms as well. You get the opportunity quite often to educate people who are starters in gardening and want to know about things. So you get to use some of your knowledge and help bring people along on a journey. I have to say, having a designated date for an opening is actually not a bad idea to get you moving.
It's the best.
You get things done.
Yeah, that's right, because you've got a date to work towards. Yeah, and you've got to get the garden looking as good as possible for that opening, because you know people will come in and they will see that milk thistle that's stuck up in the middle of the garden that you haven't got around to pulling out.
When we opened our garden, I swung the front gate because we had a gate made for us. And then I decided to put these rocks in to do a car park. This has been the week coming up to it. And then I decided to go and make a new garden bed.
That's obsessive. Although I have to say, my partner, the very first opening we had, which was way, way, way back, and Neil Robertson was the chair of the garden scheme at the time, and I reckon we were a good 2 years too early, but he was very insistent that we should open the garden. And I'm rushing around trying to tidy things up. I was sinking pots into the ground to fill gaps. and pushing the mulch back around them. Nobody worked it out.
That's what we should have done.
So that worked really well. But Craig was in there cleaning the windows. And I thought, oh, for goodness sake, the sense of
that
priorities.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, sounds right.
I can attest to that. I remember when I opened mine, it was that aspect of everyone will be looking at everything.
Yeah.
And if I can see that something like the windows need cleaning, then others will see it. Does it make any difference to the garden? No. But did I obsess over it? Yes.
Yeah. I was getting quite annoyed because I had so many garden jobs that needed doing. And there's Craig cleaning the windows. He did a damn good job on them.
Good.
I don't know that anybody commented on how clean our windows were.
We just put our blinds down.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. Everybody likes to have a sticky beak through the windows, of course.
Correct. So, but Craig felt like he was... You know, he'd done his job.
He accomplished something, which is good, and it probably needs doing again if you're listening, Craig. So everybody has different priorities about stuff. But I do love having a garden opening because it does push me.
I am doing weeding over the windows, and the windows desperately need it.
Yeah.
We've got another message. Good morning, Virginia and team. We wanted to say thank you very much, Virginia, for the wonderful tour you took us on the Botanic Gardens 2 weeks ago. It was really nice to meet a fellow 3CR listener, Jill, from East Brighton. After the Botanic Gardens, Virginia came to look at our garden and we conducted the tour for her. We would like you all to visit our garden as part of the City of Monash Open Gardens on Saturday the 8th of November from 10 till 4. Entry is free and there are four other gardens on the day.
Oh, excellent.
We are also looking forward to seeing Stephen Ryan's garden again for the Radiothon tour on October the 11th.
Oh, God, yes, I better get moving.
Thank you, Vicky and Peter, for that.
So that's
Meryl Johnson's garden in Gippsland and Picardy, also in Gippsland, are two of my favourites on the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So that's Susie.
Oh, yes. I can't see it. They've taken it away. Saturday the 8th of November is when the Waverley City of Monash Open Gardens. There's five of them.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
In fact, on that, I might just do some of our announcements.
Oh, yeah, we haven't done anything, have we? No.
Well, I like to keep it a little bit later so people are awake.
Good point.
I think some of our listeners...
Yeah, they've got made a cup of tea and John settled down.
John will be listening and he's probably cooking because he's at night time. And we haven't heard from our listener in Birmingham, England, for a while. But, you know, different people are in different spaces. But a lot of our Victorian listeners are just waking up. So
fair enough.
Grab your pens, everybody. Now, the first one is we have our Open Gardens free ticket for next week. We have one free double pass. The garden next week is called Finch's Nest and is in Mahogany Court in Druin. So if you want to try and grab the free ticket, ring in on 94190155 and talk to our producers. And then that's for next weekend. And, of course, next weekend, the other thing we've got next weekend is Bollebec.
Certainly have. So, yes, it's one of the big plant fairs in the state. You get the opportunity to have a look around the garden at Bollebec as well, which is a fairly important Mount Macedon property with a long history of very interesting gardeners that have owned it. And there'll be, I don't know, 40 or 50 stall holders with all sorts of different products, including Ben with his perennials. So the 2 days, the Saturday and Sunday, there's on-site parking. You can book tickets online. I'm not quite sure how you do it. I think you go into the Bollebec website or something like that and you should be able to book tickets online if you wish to do so. There'll be a plant creche there, so if you get slightly overloaded, you can take your plants up to the creche, go back and load up again. There'll be growers from all over with all sorts of different plant material both Saturday and Sunday. So
and then
do come up for that.
The following week, there will be the Gippsland Rare and Unusual Plant Fair in Jindavik. That's on the 11th.
Yeah, so that's at Broughton Hall up in Jindavik. So it starts at 10 o'clock and goes to 4 o'clock. So, and the same thing, there's a lot of smaller growers go there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they only have like a very small site, you know, probably maybe 30 or 40 different species, but these are species that you just don't see anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They're Pacific growers, they are. So, and look, there's a few other bigger growers there. So we've got a few rose growers, there's myself. And then also there's guided tours around Broughton out of the garden as well. I think first one's at 11 and the second's at around about 2 o'clock, I think it is. So, yeah.
Good day.
It is a good day, actually. Mm. Yeah, so it's $25 for entry.
And there is a very beautiful garden there.
Yeah, big garden. So that's 6 acres,
It's like my garden in that it has the most stunning view.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
So
you could sit in a house with no garden around you and look at that view and still be pretty happy, actually.
It's pretty nice.
Remarkable view.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful spot.
So that would be exciting.
Yeah, and I think when the you'll have these cherry blossoms, they'll be in flowering the same day as well. So because I spoke to Dave the other day and he said that they're starting to bloom quite nicely now. So, yeah, so there should be a lot in flower.
Fantastic.
Mm.
And then the following week is the Botanic Gardens Melbourne's plant sale on the 18th and 19th.
Ah, yes, the Growing Friends Group.
Yep. So that's always extremely exciting because it's another place where you can find lots of very unusual things and there's always a huge queue on the Saturday morning.
Yeah, because everybody needs to get in and get that plant they don't know they need.
Yes.
But they know if they don't get in there early, they'll miss it.
Yes, even though they don't know what it is.
No, and they've no idea. But, it doesn't matter. That's all part of the fun.
It is.
And then for a much smaller but nevertheless important event on the 18th, Rushall Garden Open Day. Now, Rushall Garden is in Clifton Hill or North Fitzroy, one of the two. And that's just a small area where people do share gardening. So that's always worth having a look at. And then on the 23rd, again at the Botanic Gardens, Melbourne, there is a book launch of a photography forage. Dr. Tom May, and this is fungal There's a new book out on fungi,
mm-hmm.
so that will be a really interesting
evening. Got any beef Wellington recipes, has it?
Duck page.
Yeah.
One assumes that that's been dropped from the menu.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the 25th and the 26th of October is the Gardevalia Festival of Gardens, which is 16 gardens across Gippsland are
wow.
open.
Mm.
I think one of the gardens you work on is open, is it not?
Yeah, up in Icy Creek, yeah. So a lot of beautiful, interesting trees. So she's collected over the years, and she's bought stuff off you, yeah. Stephen, and Don Teese. And
oh, yep.
So, you know, things that you're selling... Customers, they're only like a foot tall, and, yeah, now they're sort of, yeah, 30, 40, fantastic. 50 foot tall.
And actually, I love going into a garden and seeing a label down there. I pull it out and go, oh, God, that's my handwriting.
Yeah. but also we've got the Yarra Valley Plant Fair too, which is on the 11th of November.
I'm getting
is it
there.
Not the 11th? Is it the 11th or
ben,
the 9th?
Stop. I am reading this through in order. I am not up to November.
Yeah, there we are.
We are talking about Gardevalia and 16 gardens across Gippsland.
Yeah.
Nobody in the world knows where Icy Creek is. Could you explain where
so
it is?
So it's sort of, you're heading up towards Mount Baw-Baw. So you've got to go through Newham South, Newham, and up past Noogee, and then sort of keep crawling up the mountain there. So it's actually a really nice drive. I love driving up there. Just the scenery is absolutely amazing. You can get so high up and you're looking over towards the mountains of Mount Baw-Baw onto the east, and then if you look towards the west, you're looking towards like the Yarra Valley, all the mountains through there. So it's quite divine. It's beautiful.
Yes, I bet it's extremely beautiful.
First thing in the morning, it's amazing.
I think having 16 gardens across Gippsland open makes it a fairly extraordinary opening.
Yes.
And the same weekend, Alexandra and District open gardens, and they've got 7 gardens, and that is another place where
gorgeous
you get some
there.
Really wonderful gardens in the
yes.
Alexandra.
Mm.
So that's also, I mean, how you know what to do with yourself, because Burnley's having an open day on the 25th.
Oh,
so.
My goodness.
So wherever you
welcome
are.
Welcome to spring.
There's something to go and do and see.
Yes.
And then we get into November.
Well, can I jump back in?
Please.
There was the Sip and Bloom, which is in Murnyong. So that's being run at the St. Anne's Winery. Check out that. That's over 2 days, the 18th and 19th of October as well. Chloe Foster and Sandra Schwartz, who 3CR listeners will be very familiar with, will be there on the Sunday and doing the talks about their books and the context of that. So that will be on the Sunday.
That is fantastic, yes.
That they'll be on, but the event is Saturday and Sunday.
And Sunday. Yes, I knew I'd forgotten that one. Thank you very much, Stephen Wells. So let's go back to November. The first weekend of November, we've got the Upper Yarra Valley Garden Club has its open gardens. There are 5 gardens from Yellingbow to Gladysdale. On the 8th and 9th, the Yarra Valley Plant Fair will be, and we should be doing an open broadcast from there. Ben, do you want to tell us a bit about the Yarra Valley Plant Fair? I presume you'll be there.
Yeah, we're definitely in the same spot. We've always...
Yeah, you take the same corner up every time, which
so
is good.
It's easy. So for it's easy. We just drive in, set up, and that's it. So we don't have to worry about find Di and Clive and where are we setting up. So, yeah, it's good. But, yeah, no, that's actually between 10 and 4. That's both Saturday and Sunday. Their guest speaker, I think their main guest speaker is Jane Edmondson, which she'll be on the Saturday, and then we've got Costa on the Sunday. So so I think...
And, of course, we'll be there on the Sunday, Ben.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
As the radio show.
Yeah.
That's the most important.
But there's a lot of, like, you've got, same thing, you've got a lot of unique sort of growers going to these plant fairs. And, I mean, in these plants that you're seeing at these fairs that
you can't find
them anywhere else. And, and it's sad now when you walk into some nurseries and it's just the same stuff just laid out differently. And
if we don't have the diversity of plants getting used, then there's not the demand. So if we need people being excited about plants and different things, like I'm not not telling you how to write and do this. You guys have been doing this for years, so I'm just endorsing that and saying, you know, that's what we need. We need people that are passionate about new plants for them.
Yeah.
But are the ones that are ones that you're very familiar with, and a lot of the other growers at these events, because they're not what's on the cookie cutter shelf.
But the good thing is,
is exciting. You want new things.
You're talking variety. To the people that are growing these things, so they can educate people on.
And it's a fantastic way to find some expertise to go to these things.
Well, because when people see a new plant, a lot of the time they're actually quite hesitant because they're actually scared of it, thinking that I'm going to die it, kill it. So if you're talking to the actual grower, I mean, you're actually it's coming for the people who actually do grow these things.
Yeah.
And some of these things are so easy to grow.
Yeah.
And when you sort of mention rarity about a plant, a lot of people cringe because they think, oh, yeah, I'm going to kill it because it's so hard to grow. Well, rarity doesn't mean that it's actually hard to grow.
Of course it doesn't.
It's because of there's been an imbalance in its natural environment from over grazing animals to over development. Or chemical uses and all that sort of thing. This is why they're actually becoming.
Isn't being grown by the trade anymore. Something's going out of fashion too, Ben.
Yeah, so we lose it.
And if it's out of fashion, then you just can't buy it anywhere, and then it basically becomes rare.
Yeah. Or it's a plant that doesn't look good in a pot.
Oh, so God, yes, that happens all the time.
Yeah.
Which is so sad because most trees don't look particularly good in pots. It doesn't mean they're not fabulous to have in your garden.
Well, exactly. So, but Ben's point about going and talking to the people there that know their stuff, that's just such an important thing. I mean, I always say to people, if you go into a nursery or a big barn or something and you ask about something and they pick the label out and read it to you, go somewhere else.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can read the label yourself.
Yes.
And if that's all they can do, if they can't give you more information about that plant that isn't on the label, because you can only put so much on a label, then you're not getting service. And I have to say, I'm becoming the old grumpy nurseryman, and I do get annoyed when people come in and say, oh, I'm having trouble growing this, and you say, oh, yeah, and you talk to them a bit, and then you find out they bought it at Bunnings or whatever, and you say, think to yourself, why are you asking me about a plant you didn't even buy from me and give me some income, and yet you want my free advice on how to grow it? I think, you know, go back and ask the Bunnings staff about it. Look after your good nursery people, because they really are a huge asset.
And that's the thing you do by going to these.
Yeah, and these fairs are fabulous for that.
But even small nurseries,
visit the small nurseries.
Yeah, the smaller nurseries, I mean, some of them actually have, because they're out there to try and have a point of difference, and they will try and look for different stuff.
They will.
So
and often they will. Yeah, and often they will support local or regional wholesale nurseries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
because that's what they're promoting is local, and then also those plants grow in those conditions because they've been produced in this condition.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So, yes, and, you know, it has this sort of feed-down effect for everybody, because if we don't support those people, then those plants are going to disappear. I mean, I'm of an age now where I've been in the nursery industry longer than I like to think about. When I first started out in the nursery industry, you could go to almost any suburban Melbourne nursery, and they're almost all gone now, but they'd have their general range of things. They'd always have their collector's corner.
Yeah,
so there'd always be a little cluster of things. Places like Mount Alexander Nursery, Essendon Plant Farm, all those places that are all now gone and they've got multi-storey buildings on them.
But we do still have you. We do still have Craig.
Yeah, there's a few around.
Diggers.
Yeah, we still have a few people still hanging in there, but nowhere near like they used to be. And it's sad. It's become a much smaller field. Mm. And I see us as an endangered species in our own right, really. So, yeah, support the nurseries. I mean, they really need you. And you need them long term.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I'm bringing more and more interesting seed in. I've just got a load in from South Africa and some of the stuff that I've got coming up now, like more new pelargoniums. I've got some new alpacas coming through and all these sort of weird and wonderful sort of foliage plants that are starting to emerge. So
it's exciting.
Because we
just
have
watch this space.
So people who are interested in our stuff. So it sort of stimulates me to go and look for something that's different, so you're not looking at the same thing all the time when you come into our store. So
now we have a question on that, which might be, are there any nurseries growing Sephora Davidii?
Not that I know of. I've got one in the garden at home, and I'm hoping I'll be able to collect some seed from it in due course. I got my original seed from a plant that was growing down at Heidi Gallery.
Right.
Modern Art Gallery. I don't know whether it's still there, but they had a Sephora Davidii down in the garden getting towards the creek, and I got some seedlings from that. So I've got a young plant in the garden at home. It's the only Sephora with blue flowers. It's got sort of lavender or whitish blue.
Where's it from?
It's a Chinese Sephora. Right. I'm assuming it still is a Sephora. Some of the Sephoras have been taken out and put in other genera, so it might or might not still be one. Mm-hmm. But it's a sort of a open, airy, deciduous shrub with tiny, fine little feathery foliage and these icy blue-white flowers on it. And it's
yummy.
Really sweet. And tough as, but mine hasn't started to seed, and it's the only way you can raise it. So I've just got to wait till I get some seed.
Now, I'll quickly go back to, we've got a couple of things still to say. One, I have got five double tip passes for the Tessela Tulip Festival, which is running from September the 13th to October the 12th. So if you ring in on 94190155, there are five double passes to the Tulip Festival, and that is absolutely wonderful. The just looking at these paddocks of tulips in flower is quite spectacular. So it's
get your clogs on.
And then we have the 3CR Garden Party on the 23rd, and then we have a special event.
Well, so on the 15th of November, we're actually doing that the Kiss the Ground screening, which is actually it's a fundraiser for 3CR. So it starts at 11:30 and goes to 4 o'clock. But then we have the screening, which will actually start at 1 o'clock with a Q&A after it. So we have
now explain about the film, Ben.
So the film is actually it's designed to explain the difference between industrial farming and the regenerative sort of side of things, just on how we can actually, by supporting our soils and storing carbon back into our soils, we're getting much more nutritional and much more better value in our soils. Just how sort of, you know, trying to sort of reverse that climate sort of missing puzzle piece with the climate with by using the carbon. But it's about, I think it's educating people that eating density-rich food is actually much better for our living. So on the day, like, after the screening, we'll actually do a Q&A after it as well. So so if there's any questions, there'll be three of us on the panel that just to sort of try and simplify things with the actual film, and then sort of give you more educational sort of advice on what things we can sort of take home and sort of apply into our own sort of backyards, because the film does it's all around industrial farming, but we can back down into to normal
what we
backyards.
Do, yeah, what we can just do. And also backyards. From what I've heard, I haven't seen the film yet, but the few people I know who've seen it have all said that it's a totally excellent film.
It is, yeah.
And that's why you picked on it for our fundraiser, isn't it? Because it's about such an interesting film.
Yeah, because it's about regenerative farming. So it's a regenerative sort of practice. There's a very strong passion of mine. Same with Craig Castry. He's actually part of the panelists as well, and also we have Annie Phil. She's actually from a Short Acres farm, so it's a flower farm, so she is up in Hillsville, I think she is. So there'll be the three of us will be on the panel, and also we can explain our journey as well, like if someone wants to just to sort of understand our journey on how we sort of done the transitional sort of stage into the regenerative sort of side of things. We can do it so that people can understand, because we are doing it on a smaller scale, not a large scale.
So tell us again the date.
So it's on the 15th of November, and it starts at 11:30.
And the screening's at 1?
At 1 o'clock, and then the Q&A after it.
And it's at Fernie Creek.
It's at Fernie Creek, so which is 100 Hilton Road. And the only way you can actually attend this, it is a ticketed event. So you can actually jump on our Instagram or Facebook, and you'll see the Kiss the Ground logo, and you'll see a QR code there, and you can sort of go that way. Or you can go on to Try Booking and just type in Kiss the Ground by Treasured Perennials, and it'll all be there as well. So,
excellent.
But also on the day, we have affiliated sort of stores there as well. So we've got Ecos there. So they're going to have Natty Plants. They're going to have Biochar. We have Sell It, is CELL. So she'll actually have these little seedlings, individual seedlings. And she does it in regenerative sort of practices as well.
Vegetables?
Vegetables, yeah. Then we have Craig Castry. He'll have a book there. Also, he'll do a demonstration on how to use a refractometer.
And Craig, of course, has been on this show.
Yeah, and ourselves will be there with the nursery. We'll have plants for sale. Fernie Creek will have plants for sale.
So it'll be actually a really, really
fun
day.
Yeah, but the demonstrations...
And there's also the Fernie Creek garden to walk around, which is really very beautiful.
Yeah, but the demonstrations, I mean, Annie from Shortacre, she's going to actually do a demonstration. I'll do a demonstration on Lactobacillus, how to make it. So it should be a sort of quite... Hopefully what we want to do is we want to make it so when people walk away, they feel inspired, they've... going away with more knowledge on how we can actually live a much better life without using inorganic fertilisers and chemicals and...
Yeah. Poisons.
Poisons, yeah. Mm.
Thanks, Ben.
Great.
That's all right.
Thanks, Ben. And then the other thing is, of course, on the 23rd of November is the 3CR garden party at my place.
Brilliant.
And the only thing I haven't put on, Stephen, which people will be cross with us, is I haven't mentioned the Christmas party for Plant Trust.
Oh, yes.
And I think it's the second Sunday of December, but I better check that.
Mm, yeah, I'm fairly sure you're right about that, but I'm not dead sure either.
Yes.
But I'll have a look at my calendar while we move on and see if I can make sure.
Excellent. So this is the 3CR Garden Show, and I'm hoping you're all enjoying it. We have some questions now. Does anyone know where I can buy a fastidious tulip tree, please?
From me.
From Stephen. So that was easy.
Great question, great answer.
Yeah.
Does anyone know when Japanese spring blossom, I presume he means the plum blossom. And cherries.
Cherries, yeah.
When is best in the botanic gardens? Well, it always varies slightly every year, but I would say now. Would you not, Steve?
I would have thought so. I would have thought the cherries and things
are
in the botanic garden.
Are they out up your way?
They're just starting. Early ones are starting. Mm-hmm. So over the next week or two, there should be plenty of cherry blossom out in flower. Oh, the Plant Trust Christmas party's on Sunday the 7th of December.
Sunday the 7th of December for the Plant Trust Christmas party. Look up Plant Trust on your machine if you are interested in that. And the actual Christmas eating bit of it will be at my place, and we're going to be visiting two gardens. And then we have another question on screen, and I never quite know how to pronounce this plant.
And I can't read it from here, so you're going to have to do your best.
Hackenachloa.
Aconachloa macra.
Aconachloa.
Yeah, Aconachloa.
I've never known how to say that.
Yes. Japanese forest grass.
Yes.
Beautiful thing.
And I'm pretty sure Craig has it for sale. Yeah, do you I have do. It for sale?
I've got four varieties, I think. I've got straight green, I've got all gold, I've got Benny Kazan, which is a dwarf green, and I've got a dwarf gold as well, and the variegated ones. I've got five.
Yeah, so we grow it as well. Yeah.
So, Ben, will you have it at the plant sales?
Yeah, small numbers, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Ben will have it at the plant sales, I'm sure.
We'll go and see Stephen.
Yeah. Craig has...
Now, I can sell you a drift.
Yeah.
Well, Jacob's question is added on there. I'll be there next weekend for some.
Yeah. So good, good. They've only not long been potted up and they're just starting to move, so they don't look all that much yet.
Yeah.
But they've got root systems.
Oh, yeah, they've got root systems. And if you leave them in a pot for a month, they'll certainly be ready for planting out. But it's one of those beautiful grasses. It's got the most elegant form, Japanese forest grass. And, of course, it's one of the few grasses that will grow, in fact, in semi-shade quite well. And the gold ones are like little beacons in shade. I just love it.
I was going to say, so it's a shade more...
Yeah,
shade.
It's a forest grass, so it does, in fact, grow in semi-shade for preference. Look, the gold ones look fantastic in a big blue anodized pot or something like that, and they sort of sit so nicely. It's just such an elegant grass.
Yeah, they're much better in the shade because any sun, too much sun, they just burn.
Yeah. No, that sounds great.
So Ben will have them at Bollebeck and at...
I think more, because like Steve was saying, they're only just starting to come through. Yeah, so it'd be more for probably when we do Yarra Valley.
Yarra Valley.
Yeah, they should be looking good by then.
Yeah.
And I'm certain that Craig also has them.
I'd be surprised if he didn't.
Yeah,
actually.
So if you're in the Dandenongs rather than in Mount Macedon, you go to Craig. If you're in Mount Macedon, you go to Stephen.
Yeah, come to me.
Last week, After visiting Tilopia Gardens in Emerald, we then went to Emerald Lake. We walked up to Nobelius Heritage Park, and there are some wonderful trees there. The Nitia excelsa growing there is an extraordinary thing to see. Is the Salvia Nursery still open there? Yes, the Salvia Society is still...
They're still looking after
at
their culture.
Nobelius, yep. So, and you can find them online as well. I don't know the Nitia excelsa.
It's a New Zealand native proteaceous tree, one of the few proteaceae that have made it as far as New Zealand. I think it might be one of two species of proteaceae in New Zealand. And it's this big, tall, upright, evergreen tree with these red, spidery, almost grevillea-like flowers on it and quite heavy, slightly serrated leaves. So it's a very... handsome tree, and one of the few, apart from Pūtikawa, the New Zealand Christmas bush, one of the few trees in New Zealand that have colourful flowers, because most New Zealand flora tends to have white or pale yellow flowers, but the Nitia is a very handsome tree, but it does require that sort of cooler climate area to do well.
Well, I was thinking that with the tulip tree, we used to have a tulip tree in the Botanic Gardens and it didn't make it through the drought.
No.
Would you expect tulip trees to grow easily in Melbourne?
They can be grown quite easily. In fact, I fought for the life of a tulip tree in a... heritage listed set of units in East Melbourne.
I remember that.
And there was a tulip tree only a couple of metres away from the wall of this building, and the lady who was in charge of the corporate body was determined to have this tulip tree taken down, and I was just as determined to try and stop her because she was talking about foundations and damage and stuff. I mean, the thing had been there since the 1930s. It had done no damage whatsoever, and I pointed out to you, if you cut the tree off, when the stump rots out, it might actually have subsidence problems for the building. But anyhow, she won in the end and got the damn thing down because Melbourne City didn't have any sort of protection for trees.
Oh, how ridiculous.
You know, so, and the people who had the flat where the tree was actually growing in had gardened all underneath it, and it destroyed their garden trying to get the tree out.
Of course.
It was a nightmare, but it was a beautiful tree and it grew well.
They are beautiful trees.
I think they do better if their roots are in a reasonably cool shaded aspect. So this was sort of in between big buildings, so the sun really didn't get down in there, and it was the height of the three-story building, beautiful tree with a trunk about 2 feet in diameter, and had done really well. So they can be grown all right in Melbourne.
This is the 3CR Garden Show. I'm Virginia, and with me today are two Stevens and a Ben. If you'd like to talk to us, ring us on 94190155 or SMS us on 0488 809 855. Well, I think we should talk about some of our plants.
Well, I have to say the ones I've brought along have already been sent off to our social media
aren't you good?
Guru. I did that last night and I got a message back to say that they'd got the images, so that's good.
And can I just butt in here? We've also sent the film to our, so it'll be on our page as well.
The socials, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be on our socials. So if you want to know about the film Ben's been talking about.
All right, so yeah, actually I did see it come up on the 3CR socials, so that's good. So you could go in through there.
Yes.
All right, well, I brought three plants along, and my topic today is plants that might have some vague usefulness. The first one I brought along is a pomodaris.
Now, I think we'll emphasise the vague.
Yeah, it is vague. Pomodaris is a mainly Australian genus, but the one I brought along this morning is actually a New Zealand one, Pomodaris kumaro, and its common name in New Zealand is gum digger's soap. You can rub up a lather from the flowers or the leaves. I'm not quite sure which. I'll have to have a crack at it at some stage. It's a shrub, 2 metres tall probably at most, flowering in the late winter, early spring, and these lovely powder puffy soft yellow flower heads over the top of the dark green foliage. It's charming. It's a really pretty
shrub. It looks great.
Yeah, it's a really nice plant. And I think it has medicinal uses with First Nations people in New Zealand, because I've had quite a number of Maori come to see me about buying it because of its medicinal uses, but I don't know what they are. I must do some research. But pomodoro Pieris is not a big genus, and it's restricted to Australia and New Zealand as far as I know. I think New Zealand's only got one or two. We've got something like 10 or a dozen.
I've got some growing in my street, just wild.
Yeah.
And they are absolutely stunning at the moment.
It's a beautiful plant.
And, of course, the Botanic Gardens has quite a few
pomodoros. And, in fact, the Botanic Gardens has a pomodoros collection. So
with Plant Trust.
With Plant Trust. So you should go and have a look at them down in the Melbourne Bot Gardens as well. And they're a sort of a obscure, underutilised genus of Australian natives. Everybody plants their grevilleas and their bottle brushes and their acacias and stuff, but people don't think to go and ask for a pomodoros.
Or do a hedge out of it.
Yeah, well, that's probably...
Well, they do clip up as a nice hedge.
Yeah, so pomodoros kumaro, which is out in flower now.
And can I say on that, that's a good point, Ben, about the hedge, that for people who do want to really try and plant native plants... Unlike something from Western Australia, this is actually fairly native. The pomodoros grows wild in the Yarra Valley.
Well, our own species do, yes. And we have the big tree one at Macedon, the name of which eludes me. I can't remember, but the really big one has leaves about a foot long. Unfortunately, it doesn't have as bright a coloured flower, though. Its flowers are sort of powdery looking and not overly showy, but
the shrubby one that grows around me has beautiful flowers. Looks extremely like this. The leaves are different.
And anybody who knows Phibalium, it's a similar look. This week's video that Matthew and I put up on our YouTube channel was about Phibaliums at Karanga Native Nursery, so we went and did a specific story on them. So there's the pomodoros. And the second plant I brought along, this is a niche plant if there ever was one. It's a thing called Petasites japonica nishikibuki, which is the variegated leaf form of Petasites japonica. Now, in Japan, it's a bog plant and it needs to have boggy conditions here. You could grow it in a big pot with a saucer under it. That might be the way to grow it here. If you've got a primal bog in your garden...
Well, actually, I am growing it in part of a garden which is... It doesn't get a lot of water. Mm. It doesn't flower very well.
No.
The leaves, it still colours up nicely. It just doesn't get as big as what it normally would if it had the water.
Yeah.
So it still stays alive.
It still stays alive, yeah. So, I mean, I'd probably throw a little bit of water in summertime.
Yeah, well, that's about I certainly would. But if you can plant it in a primal bog, you can end up with leaves about 2.5 feet across.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So you can get these enormous leaves on it. Now, the usability of this plant is that I know that in Japan, the flower buds, when they're first coming through, and they look like a slightly gappy cauliflower that just erupts out of the ground, they pick them and pickle them. So they make a pickle with them. And I believe the leaf stems are also used in culinary recipes. But I love this variegated leaf form for just its amazing exuberance.
Have a look on our socials, everybody, because it is a fabulous looking plant.
It is. It's a really good thing.
Just the shape of it.
It could be a thug. If you had a real big bog garden, it could take over the whole bog garden.
Oh, yeah.
So you do need to be aware of its potential.
I don't think a lot of our listeners have big bog gardens.
Yeah, sadly. I have to say, I would love a big bog garden.
Me too.
Yeah, it would be so much fun, because when you go to Europe and you see those amazing bog gardens full of primulas and the gunneras and, you know, the stilbies and rodgersias and all those fabulous moisture-loving plants, it's just stunning. Yeah. So anyhow, so Petasites japonica.
And if we do have a bit of bog, it's usually around a dam, therefore it's in the sun. Does that sit in the sun?
It's not as happy out in full sun. It's better in light shade. And, of course, the variegated form stands out really well in the shade because it looks like light shining in from somewhere. So I think it's a particularly good one. But there's also a big-leafed green one called Giganteus, funnily enough. And then there's a purple-stemmed one called Purpureus, which has a much smaller leaf. So I've got three varieties of Petasites japonica, and there's other Petasites species out there as well. And there's one called Fragrans, winter heliotrope, which is an absolute thug, and I would never introduce it into any moist garden because you'll never get rid of it ever. So some of them could be quite weedy, but this one's not so weedy, but it can be quite vigorous.
But it's attractive, so.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And do you have it as well, Ben?
I do, yeah.
Will you be selling it?
No. Not yet.
Not yet.
I've got oodles.
Yeah. I see Stephen, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But the other one I like is that the palmatum one.
Yes,
the
Frigidus palmata.
Yeah.
Which has a big maple leaf or a liquid amber type leaf. Nowhere near as big as japonica, but still very attractive foliage.
Just that leaf structure, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that, and you get a nice goldy colour.
Yeah, good leaves in the garden are so important because they're there much, much longer than the average average flower. Mm. And so I think it's an interesting plant with marginal usability. Mm. And my last one is a Rubus, which is the blackberry family, and there's lots of bad and lots of good plants in this family, and this one is Rubus spectabilis, which means spectacular. I'm not sure about the spectacular, but it has quite pretty dark magenta-y coloured flowers on
it. The colour is very good.
Yeah, the colour's really good. And it's a suckery, thickety shrub, a bit sort of raspberry cane-ish, although it doesn't tend to sucker quite as far as your average raspberry, but it still has that sort of form. It has prickly stems, but then so do roses. So I don't see that any of these plants should be discarded just because they're prickly.
But it's like a soft prickle as well.
Yeah, look, yeah, it's
a much smaller prickle.
It could cut your skin. I guess it could stick in, but it's straight. Yeah. Whereas the average rose thorn is hooked. Yeah. And once it goes in, it stays in. Yeah, so I'd much rather have this Rubus, I have to say.
Yeah.
And it does get small, edible raspberry-type fruit. It's called a salmon berry in North America where it comes from. So for all of those out there doing their I've got to eat something off everything I plant, even though you're probably never going to make salmon berry jam, I think you'd have to have far too much of it, you can pick and browse it as you go around the garden as well.
And does it, what's it taste like?
Salmon?
Bit raspberry. Yeah, no, it doesn't taste like salmon. Fortunately, any berry that tastes
Stephen
fishy
Wells,
would put me right off. I have a great soft spot for some of the interesting Rubuses. There's some really lovely ones out there, and many of them are quite benign, and they're generally easy to grow. Anywhere you could grow a clump of raspberries or a boysenberry or whatever, you could grow a salmon berry. The foliage is quite pleasant in the summer. It has a quite decent size bright green leaf.
What sort of height does it get to? What shape?
If you're not pruning it much, and I generally recommend people take the second and third year canes out on a regular basis and just leave the stronger, younger ones coming up. If you don't prune it, though, you could end up with a plant pushing on to nearly 3 metres.
Yeah. Okay.
So it can get quite tall, especially if it's in a bit of good rich soil.
Yep.
I know the plant I get my suckers from, which is one I sold years ago to one of the big gardens up on Mount Macedon, and they let me come back and just get suckers from it so I don't have to have a stock plant of my own. You run out of room for stock plants. That's the problem.
Yes.
You know, so I rely on some of the other gardens that have got things from me over the years to get propagating material. The plant I sold up there has been in there for 10, 15 years, I suppose. And it's suckered over an area of about 2.5, 3 metres. And it's filling up underneath some trees and things and doing a sterling job.
Brilliant.
And the gardener seems to quite like it, even though it is prickly, so that's fine, as long as she's happy with it.
Good.
Excellent. Today is the final day of the Native Orchid Show and Sale in Mount Waverley at Miller Crescent, and that's on from 10 till 3, if anybody's fancying
a
native. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
That would be exciting.
Thing.
Nothing more gorgeous than our native orchids.
Oh, yes.
What about you, Ben? You've brought some nice plants in.
Yeah, so I actually brought a whole heap of different varieties of primulas in, actually. So when,
speaking of wet.
A lot of these, like, primula auriculas. I have a lot of people come in and they say primula auriculas are one of the hardest ones to grow. They always kill them. But they're actually quite easy to grow. It's just you've got to move them around, like grow them in pots. So the trick is to actually have it in a pot, put it out in the sun in winter, and even sort of, you know, start of spring, and then put it in a shady sort of moist, cool spot over summer. They'll live quite happily, and just change your potting mix every 2 to 3 years.
Repotting is important, though,
isn't it, with
the auriculas, because if you don't repot regularly, they tend to go backwards.
Well, yeah, because the soil gets too thick.
Yeah.
It sort of breaks down and becomes very gluggy and holds too much moisture. So they do like a lot of moisture, but it's got to be free drainage. So they are quite easy to grow.
Would you say that is a general problem with pots where the soil's not changed, that it becomes too gluggy?
It does, yes. Yeah.
And like holds too much moisture.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's just because it's not draining through quick enough. So potting mix is normally designed, what they classed as aeration. So some of them average around about sort of what they call 15 to 20% aeration, and that will actually determine your moisture flowing through it. But when it breaks down, you're only getting around about maybe 5% of aeration, so your moisture will move very, very slowly through. So then a lot of the bacteria and that will start building up and growing and fungi and all that, and then it starts sort of feeding off basically the plant roots as well, so it can kill the plant slowly that way. So
and, of course, if it's too wet, you're also going to get lack of oxygen in the soil.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But you should build yourself an auricular theatre.
Oh, yeah. So they're actually, yeah, like when they're flowering, but when they're like, because you have them in pots, bring them inside when they're flowering. Yeah. Enjoy the flowers because they're actually quite highly fragrant, and there's some really unique, beautiful sort of
some weird colours.
Yeah, colours. Yeah,
amazing colours. But that's actually a true thing. The auricular theatre. That's what was. Auriculas were one of those poor man's flowers in England, where coal miners and things would grow them, and they compete against each other, and you know, they'd have these flower shows where it was the auricular show, or it was the dianthus show, or it was the tulip show or whatever, and all of these amateur experts would get together and they'd be breeding and producing all sorts of new ones, and they'd actually build these sort of staged theatres to show off their auriculas.
Wow.
The skill of that seems to have disappeared a bit.
Look, there's still breeders overseas. Yeah. Like, there's still some new varieties coming out, and still amazing colours. Mm. Like, some that the foliage have that, like, sort of a dusty, it's like someone's dusted icing sugar over the foliage, and even the flowers as well. And then you'll have this beautiful green centre, and, like, I'm talking bright green centre with a silver or a pure white sort of margin, or a pure red margin, or there's some really unique ones out there.
Amazing things.
So, but yeah, it's like, look, we have a collection of them. We've got probably maybe, I reckon, pretty close to about nearly 15 varieties of the auriculas, just all different shapes, different, there's single flowers, there's double flowers, but just the colouring as well is what we've gone for as well.
And will you photograph some of these and put them up for us, please?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. So, like, I've bought three in. So the original species is normally the true Primula auricula is a nice sort of lemony yellow colour, and they come from usually a broad sort of area through the Alps. So you know, they're sort of not really a designated sort of sites or area, but they are.
Which
quite,
Alps?
So they're up through, what's that one, just below, so the southern end of Poland.
That'll do.
Yeah, so.
We don't need to know the mountain.
No, because there's a quite band of where they've been distributed through the Alps there, so and they're sort of elevated quite high, so they're one of those ones that sort of
so no wonder they don't actually grow terribly well in Melbourne,
but they do
or in my garden,
but they do. So it's just how you actually we have them grow them in pots, in the sun,
a little bit of knowledge and you're fine.
Yeah, so in the sun
in
through
winter
and start of spring.
Well, see, I do the same with my coriander. It gets winter sun and summer shade, because I have to have coriander because I cook a lot of curries.
Yep.
And that's how I cope with it. I move it into the shade in
summer,
summertime.
Yeah.
So that then makes it last a lot longer, obviously, because obviously coriander can shoot.
It'll bolt if it's... Mm. And the other thing that makes it bolt is moving it once it's come up, so you need to sow it from seed.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah,
diversion into herbs.
Yeah, no, you've got to keep throwing the seed around.
Yeah.
You've got some other primulas here which are quite different as well. Some lovely ones.
Yeah, so I've also got, it's the Primula virus, but I've got two species. I've got the true species of Primula virus, and then I've also got another one called the Sunset Shade. So it actually gets a little bit taller. they're a smaller flower, but you get a big sort of candelabra sort of shape about them, a very messy candelabra with them. Mm. And, you know, on each flower head you can get anywhere between maybe 10, 15 sort of flower, primula, sort of tubular-like flowers.
Growing in the mountains of Romania only a couple of months ago.
Yeah, but they're the same thing. They're distributed all around Europe, so they're not sort of designated to certain areas. But, they vary. They're that nice woodland into grasslands. Mm. And those lower-lying sort of wet areas as well. So they're quite versatile. But then you've got to think about it, growing here in Australia is a different story.
Yeah.
So you can't just sort of grow them out in the full open because they just won't survive, especially in summer. So we actually have these sort of in areas where they're actually just morning sun and up to about sort of lunchtime and then shade for the rest of the day. They do like that cool root system, so we always make sure they're heavily mulched, bit of moisture throwing around, plenty of nutrients there for them. So, and look, they survive quite well.
Yeah, either that or you've got to have a cow paddock up in the mountains with water flowing through it.
Yeah.
And that's how I saw them in Romania. You'd have these sloping paddocks and they'd be growing on the edges of the paths on that sort of drop down, and there'd be almost water flowing through them.
Yeah. Wow.
And they were stunning.
Oh, look, they're a lot hardier in their natural environment. Like, I brought another one in. It's called Primula vulgaris.
Mm. I love that.
Yeah, look, that's the same thing. It's distributed in different locations. Mm. It's on coastal areas in Ireland.
Mm. And in Britain. It's all through Britain. It's beautiful.
And it's like, you know,
I've got one that's alive.
Yeah, grasslands.
It's in the ground and it's alive.
But then grow it here, you have to be a bit more particular where you're actually growing it. So where over there, they're full sun, copping the coastal winds and everything, and they're thriving and you see them flowering everywhere. But, yeah, here's a bit different. That same thing where it's morning sun to about lunchtime, shade.
And they say that we're going to get drier, not necessarily in summer. This is the one thing. We might get a little bit of summer rain, but, oh, dear, I feel like I'm in drought at the moment. Mm. I wouldn't think of planting a primula. But I'm not very good at pots because I come up to Melbourne and then...
Yeah, if you're not there with pots most of the time, I mean, you can get away with a couple of days usually, but in summer certainly you need to be... You need to be in residence if you're going to look after pots.
Yeah.
So my daughter refers to my pots as death row. Do you want me to water death row, Mum?
Another interesting one I brought in was Anemonelia, is it? Or is it? I think it's changed its name back to Thalictroides.
I'm not sure on that one because I haven't grown it for a while. But
could you hold it up, please? I know we're telly, but
it's only small growing, so very similar to like you know those little wooden anemones.
Yeah, it has that look about it.
Yeah. So, but it actually. I think at first, initially, it got classed as an enemy, but then it actually got put into its own genus. Mm. So, and I think that went into Anemonelia, I think it is.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
Thalictroides. I haven't kept up with that one, but anyway, I'll do some research.
But I've got a feeling it's gone into Thalictroides. Mm. So, nice little dainty little...
it is very dainty, and it's a very pretty flower.
So the foliage is very similar to like a maiden hair fern, but just much smaller as well. Yep. And then you have these beautiful sort of white, sort of like an enemy-like type flowers on top of it. So, just...
A lovely little woodland ephemeral.
Yeah.
Before we go to the rest of your flowers, my darling, when they are absolutely stunning, I think we'll just catch up with a couple of messages. The Manchurian pears lining both sides of Taylor Avenue in Maribyrnong are looking absolutely stunning. And if you're in the inner west, they're well worth a visit. My pears, they're not Manchurian, but they're the other really common one.
Probably a capital or...
Capital, or, I think.
Yeah, Chanticleer.
They are looking absolutely superb. Some
hate
years...
the smell of them.
Oh, do you?
Oh, can't stand the perfume of them. There's something sort of, I don't know, unflower-like about the scent of them.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me at all. Mm. And I've just noticed around the Yarra Valley that the pears are looking fabulous this year. Mm. I mean, some years I barely notice mine, but they're just... they're looking fabulous at the moment. So I quite agree with that text. This is a year for looking at pears.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they're rather overplanted.
So how about what you say, like the fragrance? Isn't it funny? Because even like with Buxus, like people say, oh, it smells like cat's pee, but then I think it actually smells like honey. So people can have different perspectives on...
And look, what you're told something smells like is generally what you'll find yourself, because scents can be really suggestive.
Exactly.
So if I tell you something smells of pineapple, it will smell of pineapple if you've never smelt it before.
Right,
because I've planted that in your head.
Yep.
And I grow a tree in the garden homes, just finished flowering, which I adore, a thing called a Zara microphylla.
Oh, yes,
it's the most gorgeous little evergreen tree with this lovely fanny habit, perfect for a suburban garden because it doesn't grow terribly wide. And in late August, early September, its minute flowers come out. You wouldn't see them, but you smell it from a distance. And most people say it smells of vanilla. I think there's a definite chocolate undertone to the scent, and I say it smells like freshly baked chocolate cake, which is, of course, has vanilla in it anyway, and that's what everybody smells when they smell my Azara after I've told them what it smells like. And I have another plant that the leaves, if you brush them, smell like slightly rancid peanut butter, and if I tell people that first, that's what they'll smell. If I don't tell them, they'll smell all sorts of things, and then I'll say it smells like rancid peanut butter, and I go, Oh, yeah, of course it does.
It does, yeah.
Suggestions.
It is. Yeah. It's all about suggestions.
Jacob, could I please see the bottom message? Virginia, on Monday we visited the Bot Gardens for the first time in a couple of months. We were surprised at how little is in flower there at the moment, apart from camellias, azaleas and rhododendrons. Well, that's actually quite a lot.
Yeah, because they've got oodles of them.
The perennial border was bare. The perennial border, of course, is bare at this time of year, and that is because it is geared to be completely perfect in February.
Mm.
When you think about February in Melbourne, it is a very hard time to have a garden looking good.
It is
incredibly hot, it's incredibly dry, and the perennial border at the Botanic Gardens is one of the only places that looks fantastic.
Perennials are more sort of the end of October into November, and then into autumn
and
as well.
And they've only recently cut it down because that is their timing, whereas other people have cut their perennial borders earlier.
Mm.
What would you recommend as highlights in the Bot Gardens right now? Thanks, PNC.
Ooh.
I would say that to go up to the arid garden, the volcano, you've got the cactus are all coming out, all sorts of things that come from dry lands across the gardens.
The cycads are all coming into new leaf.
Yes.
People don't think of them as being dynamic, but when you see the cycads erupting with their rosettes of new leaves on them, they're stunning.
They are, they are.
And what we're looking for at this in the winter and at this time of the year is the things that come from hot climates because they tend not to flower in the middle of summer.
Great. So like the single, the aeonium, flowering, like the bright
yellow. Yes.
And because often people think, oh, succulents are good for summer. No, no, they're good because they last through summer. Their flowering and their open time is
now.
Winter. It's now coming into spring, and the foliage all opens up, the rosettes open up nice, and then the cone flower heads just look stunning, as well as the things like the aloes. So you've got these yellows and oranges.
Oh, yeah. The aloes have been fabulous.
And
this
year. And so that is the southeast corner of the Botanic Gardens is where all the dry gardens, although the sensory garden is looking good at the moment too.
Yes. Yep.
But it's very much that side of the gardens, the top side of the gardens on the east and the south.
Yep.
And you find a lot in the gardens at the moment. Manchurian pears absolutely stink.
See, there's somebody agrees with you. I just don't like pear blossoms perfume. But then I make an allowance for hawthorn, which probably even smells stronger.
Yeah.
But somehow or another, it doesn't offend me as much as the pear blossom does.
There is a street in Glen Waverley that needs to be avoided at all costs at this time of year.
I love it.
That's a beauty. My Prunus persica, versicolor, only produced beautiful white flowers this year. No pink stripes. Why, please?
That just happens. I mean, those sorts of plants are unstable. And so they throw white, pink and sort of almost a dark cerise pink flowers all on the one tree, but it's not stable. So some years it will veer more to one, some years it'll veer more to another. Obviously this year, this specific tree, and I'm not saying all of them are doing it, isn't throwing the pinker flowers. So
because what they do is they give the plant a virus. So when the plant gets a virus, it does this genetic... So it's like it shares information, so the plant can actually replicate that virus, and then it goes throughout the plant to get that colouring. So often, to be technical, it's the horizontal gene transferring. It's not sharing that information and replicating that gene from that virus to sort of create that variance in that.
I have to say, I have some reservations about that tree anyway.
The Prunus.
Yeah, the Prunus.
What's its ordinary name?
Well, it's the it's a flowering peach.
It's a peach. That's what I was
persica
looking for.
Persica is a peach, I don't know. Plants that throw flowers spontaneously of all sorts of different formations and colours can be a little bit hectic I think. And I would prefer to have a white one and a pink one than one that throws flowers of all sorts of colours, because, I don't know, it's like going to a wedding and being sprayed with confetti. And I don't think the peaches have a particularly pleasant shape either, I have to say. They're gawky trees. They're not elegant trees, so they're not my first ranking, but if you like them, well, that's fine. I mean, everybody's garden's different and everybody's taste is different, but I'm just throwing mine out there. And smell. Everybody's sense of smell is also different, but yeah, I find that Versicolor peach a bit weird.
I do like the Prunus mume because it's the first one to come out.
Yeah, but yeah, again, it can also be a bit of a gawky tree.
Yeah,
it's not really,
well, I mean, the Pride of the Incas, which is out at the moment.
Yes, the Cantua buxifolia. That was in flower down at Williamstown Botanic Gardens when I was down.
And in fact, there's two or three of those in the Botanic Gardens and they look absolutely magnificent, but it's the ugliest bloody plant.
It is the worst plant in a small pot you've ever seen
in your life.
It's
not a good plant in the garden either. It's just got the best flower.
It's one of those plants you have as a background.
Yeah, it's got to be somewhere where it gives you wow factor when it's in flower and the rest of the year it hides.
Yeah.
So you don't want to have it as a front ranking thing.
There's a stunning one just near the sensory garden in the Botanic Gardens, and somebody else has come back saying Grey Ear, Sparmania, and Cleanthus are all out at the moment in the Botanic Gardens and looking magnificent.
Grey is a fabulous thing. You've got these huge candles of brilliant scarlety flowers on it and these big, soft, bright green geranium-like leaves. It's a fabulous plant. It's drought-tolerant, it's heat-tolerant. It's a fabulous thing.
So have you got Tomentosa?
There isn't a Tomentosa.
Isn't there a Tomentosa?
No. There's Grey Sutherlandii, which is the common one that's got a smooth leaf. There's Grey Rattlecofflerii, which is the furry one.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. I thought it was Tomentosa.
No. Rattlecofflerii.
Yeah.
And there's a third.
Fabulous name.
Yeah. Well, there's a third species called Grey Flanaganii, but I haven't seen it.
Which of the two have got the better? The first two have got the better flower?
Probably Sutherlandii, but I quite like the furry leaves of Rattlecofflerii. The flowers are very similar. If you picked a flower head off and didn't show the leaves, you might struggle to work out which species you were looking at. Mm. It's only really the leaves that hold them apart in a way.
And, of course, the other thing that's out in the Botanic Gardens at the moment is the Gymeas.
Yes.
And they are, I mean, when you can find a 20-foot flower, it is always good.
Oh, my goodness.
It's useful if you try to flower decorate St Paul's Cathedral. Well, flower arrangements in a cathedral have to be big.
They do.
They're stunning because where I come from in New South Wales, when I used to do a lot of bushwalking, you'd be walking through them when they're in full flower. You just have like a forest of them in flower with all the grass trees.
I think they look amazing.
Yeah. Well, and they're so unnative-like.
We've planted a few at the hospital and in a couple of spots. One is flowering now and it's actually got quite a low foliage. I was chatting with one of the patients the other day and he said he'd planted one down Gippsland Way that had about 20 years, still hadn't flowered. And he was looking out his window at one that was flowering and I was feeling a little bit bad for him that a younger one was flowering. But I just love, like, that in a small space, the upright.
Which is Dorianthus excelsa.
Excelsa.
And then you've got Palmeri, which is that lower growing.
I love the excelsa. Well, the excelsa's good if you need it in a small, in a defined space.
Yeah.
The Palmeri I love because there's so much more flower on it, but you just never know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
No. But
it'll come straight out
big
over the path.
Yeah. But you still need a bit of space
where you don't
for
want
them,
it to be. Yeah.
You still need a bit of space for it because they can get quite wide.
Oh, heck yeah, yeah. But that's why you go to the Botanic Gardens.
Exactly.
And or other established gardens
to enjoy seeing things that you couldn't possibly put into a smaller garden.
Exactly.
Now, hi 3CR team. I'm thinking of planting some tetrapanics in my courtyard garden. Mm. My question is about its pollen, as I plan to dine out there over spring and summer and I don't want to find it too difficult.
Well, if you're not touching the plant, it's not pollen that's an issue with tetrapanics, it's the furriness on the leaves. You can gag on it. It's just awful. If you get a throat full of it, it can virtually choke you. I learned that by throwing some through the shredder.
Oh, my goodness.
And Stephen Wells, you're nodding.
Oh, I think I remember looking it up and researching because I wanted to put it in my garden, but I think one of the things that came to mind also was, and I think you mentioned on your website where you had it, was the ability for it to just
sucker and grow. But if it's in a refined area, I mean, if it's an area that's got, you know, concrete paths and buildings and other things, it will sucker quite away, but it doesn't sucker against each plant. So you end up with individuals that come up and you can still underplant and all that.
But you've got a problem in a courtyard that you will brush against it, I assume, and that could be a problem?
It could be when they're young plants, but of course if you allow them to grow up, they'll be above your head.
Correct.
Right. So and in a courtyard garden, that's exactly how I'd grow them. I'd allow them to grow tall enough where I can walk in and under them, because if you've got them down at face level, they actually take up quite a bit of room, particularly if you get the giant leaf version called Rex.
Yeah.
And it gets leaves, you know, enormous leaves on it, which are just absolutely fabulous. But a young plant of that will take up 2 or 3 metres.
Or if you're concerned about it, think about another plant.
Yeah. Hmm. And we've got one more message. I'm not a fan of the fragrance of Maria blooms. I think they smell like synthetic citrus air freshener.
You don't need to worry about it too much, because there's not a lot of it down here. Yeah. It's more Sydney and Queensland. Yeah. There's a lot of that up there.
That's where your head
is. I find some of those scented pelargoniums smell like sort of artificial lemon freshener and things like that. They don't smell like a natural lemony. There's something weirdly chemical about them.
Which ones? Yeah.
That tomentosa type pelargoniums with that really lemony smell.
Yeah, but look, there's some of the species pelargoniums. There's some amazing fragrances. Oh, yeah. Like I just got one blooming now, which is Pelargonium anthifolium, and it's actually got a real nice clove, sort of cinnamon clove sort of fragrance. Yeah. So some of them are amazing fragrances. I've got some real, some vanilla fragrances in them. So there is some nice ones there. It's those real ones that they've bred that you get those real, they're not, it's very
now
chemical.
Somebody has asked us to spell Greyia.
G-R-E-Y-I-A. Exactly. Greyia. Ah. Yeah.
And somebody also has pointed out that the extremely tall wisteria is beginning to flower at the botanic gardens. Now, that is an absolutely brilliant plant because it must be 100 foot high.
Yeah.
It has been there for so many years. It's just as you walk...
Yeah, whereabouts is...
As you walk into the gardens, you're coming from where the...
conservatory.
The conservatory is.
Yep.
Walking into the gardens and you've got the research, the herbarium on one side. It's at the end of the herbarium.
Great.
And growing up through that big conifer there, big pinus.
It's Pinus radiata.
Yeah.
So a hideous pine, because they're so common.
Yeah, but they're beautiful when they're really, really old.
Old, exactly.
You know, if you see a really old radiata pine, you go, oh, my God.
Well, and you have to leave them because they're so important for the black cockatoos.
They are. In fact, the cockatoos have learnt about pine cones, which is a two-edged sword, because it means that those of us who want to collect the cones off some of the rarer pines don't get any seed because the cockies get in and clean it out.
Well, the black cockatoos come in, and I'm sure they're throwing those radiata cones at me.
Yeah, quite.
Well,
that's part of the fun.
So because we got one in the back of our property, and as soon as we're here, we just don't go out there at all.
No.
Don't go near the chickens or anything.
So. Right.
That's the way to see a wisteria, I have to say. Getting back to the wisteria plant, to see it growing up through a big old tree.
It's fabulous.
Why more people don't use rather boring old trees and grow a damn good wisteria up through them, I have no idea.
And the thing with that too is that at the base... It's as big as a big man's thigh.
Yeah.
It's huge, which also makes it particularly, I think.
Well, I've seen a bigger one here. Well, I couldn't even put my
man's thigh or wisteria?
The wisteria. I couldn't even put my arms around it.
Really? Where was that?
Well, I did a job and the brief was to, because it was actually growing over this house and the roof was all caved in and everything, and the brief was to basically save the wisteria, pull the house down, build a structure.
Oh, wow.
And I did.
Now, that's sensible.
Yeah.
So I did. So
go the plant.
So all the posts were ironbark. I'm talking 200 squares. They're three and a half metres tall, all these beams. Everything had to be craned in. So I had to work on these beams and posts outside, and then we had a crane truck come in and he lifted all these. We had about, I don't know, there might have been about 50 posts or something like that. So the structure was 16 metres by 12 metres. So we lifted this wisteria off the old house, pulled the old house down, built this big structure and then dropped the wisteria on top of it. Didn't even break a branch.
Wow.
Well done.
So, yeah.
Now, I have to say, everybody, we've only got a minute and a half to go.
Yes, I noticed we were getting close. Yes.
So I think we're going to say goodbye.
Sounds like a reasonable thing to do at this point.
That's Stephen Ryan. Goodbye from Stephen Ryan.
Goodbye.
From Stephen Wells.
And hopefully see you at the plant fair.
Yeah.
Yes.
And plant fairs.
Plant fairs, yes.
Yes, and so next week we have Bolobec.
Yep. First one off the rank.
Yep. And the following week after Bolabek, we have...
The Gippsland Rare Plant Fair. Yep.
Genevieve.
Yep. And then the next plant fair after that will be at Yarra Valley.
Yarra Valley yep. Plant Fair, which is in the second weekend of November.
Yeah, and then it's us. Then we're doing the yes. Kiss the Ground screening. So, which... Tickets come
lots
on.
To do, everybody.
Yeah. Yes, it's very exciting. And one last spelling of Grey EI, please. We've had another one.
Greyia.
Thank you. Goodbye, everybody. Hope bye you've all. Enjoyed this show.
Listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.